guys, and welcome to episode 219 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, in this episode, I interviewed Natalie Maragoni. Natalie is an associate marriage and family therapist specializing in CBT for the treatment of obsessive compulsive disorder. She's also an advocate, and that's how I've known her over the years. And in this episode, I talk with Natalie about her OCD story. I talk to Natalie about OCD treatment for kids, adolescents, and adults in this episode. So it's very wide ranging. Natalie explains how she adapts CBT for kids, building a relationship, advice for parents, bringing the family into session. We talk about acceptance and commitment therapy alongside ERP, bringing values, ACT metaphors, ERP and this idea of willingness within ERP. We talk about her advocacy work and much, much more. So wide-reaching episode, and I hope it helps you. On the podcast today, I have Natalie Maragoni. Natalie is a cognitive behavioral therapist who specializes in the treatment of obsessive compulsive disorder and other anxiety and OC-related disorders. Natalie has also been an OCD advocate under the name mindonfire_OCD on Instagram for many years. Welcome to the podcast, Natalie.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
It's good to have you on the podcast. I've known you for a while, so it's good to finally chat to you on here.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm so excited.
Excellent. Yeah. Right. Well, let's get straight into it. So, you know, you are a therapist now. So I think when I first met you, you were training. Now you're obviously working with people. So it'd be good to, yeah, just hear your therapy story. What got you to the point of working with people with OCD?
Yeah, definitely. So I am still an associate, meaning I'm not licensed yet, hopefully soon. But what really got me into it was I have OCD myself. I was diagnosed around age 12. I could not find the treatment in my hometown for OCD. My parents couldn't find it. They kind of did some Googling on their own. They had a feeling that's what I was struggling with, but no one in our hometown specialized in it. So they ended up taking me to Los Angeles. I was in a research study over there. That's where I got the diagnosis. Okay. And they are the ones that connected me with a therapist that specifically specializes in OCD. So that was my very first exposure to ERP. And that was awesome. I got a lot better.
Thanks.
Really quickly. And then after that, I kind of just ebbed and flowed. OCD came, OCD went, you know how it does. It kind of ebbs and flows. And as I got older, I really wanted to be a therapist. I always knew I wanted to be a therapist, but I didn't realize that I could specialize in OCD. And I actually brought it up to a fellow therapist before I was even, maybe it was while I was still in school actually. And he kind of said something like, you know, maybe best not to limit yourself. You know, you don't want to specialize in just one thing. You want to kind of get all the experience. And I was really bummed out by that conversation because that's really all I wanted to do with OCD and anxiety disorders.
Yeah.
That's really all I wanted to do. So that was my experience for a little while. And then I ended up going to the OCD conference in San Francisco. I believe that was 2017. I'm not positive. 2017 or 2018, I went to that OCD conference, and it was there that I realized I can actually specialize in this. And there's a huge need. And even to this day, there's still a really big need in my hometown. So that's what got me into it in the first place.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you kind of, you know, realized that there was a need and that you could do just the focus on OCD. And yeah, you're right that there is a need, and it's great to see people specializing in that. And truly helping those people. How does your kind of personal experience help you now as a therapist working with OCD?
A lot. So I can actually say to people, I have been there and I get it and I know how it feels. And that I found has been a really helpful way for me to connect with my clients. They trust me, I found, a lot faster, because they know I've been through it. I've been through it. I actually know how it feels. I haven't just gone through the training and the schooling, and I've actually lived it. And so personally, I am really open with my clients. Every therapist is a little bit different with self-disclosure, but I err on the side of being more open if it's in their best interest and if I feel like it will help them. And so most of my clients know that I struggle with it, and I found that it's actually been really helpful for our relationship. And just for, it's actually a great reminder for me too, because I'm constantly pushing people towards their fears, and it's reminding me of my own skills. Like, I have to walk the walk as well if I'm going to be doing this with clients.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And do you often find yourself coming out of a session and almost thinking, oh, I need to push harder in certain areas of my own stuff?
I do. Yeah, sometimes I do. I'm like, oh my goodness, I need to face my fear. I'm having my client face their fear. Mm. So I need to go do it as well. So it's actually, excuse me, it's actually a really great reminder for me.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear. So you primarily work with children?
I work with all ages.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
All ages. But I do have several kids.
Cool.
I love working with the little ones, especially, so teenagers.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, let's focus on that part of your treatment initially, or your therapy. Sure. When working with kids or even teenagers, and it's obviously going to differ between the two, but how do you kind of explain exposures and leaning into your fears and stuff?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And I think a lot of times we think that kids, we have to dumb it down, or we have to explain it differently. Mm-hmm. And we do, in a sense, we have to explain it a little bit differently and simplify it. But really, I mean, as we both know, the treatment for OCD is pretty straightforward. You purposely amp up your anxiety, and then you practice resisting compulsion. So the way that I like to explain that to them is I'll use little crafts. Like, sometimes we'll make slime, and I'll demonstrate sticky thoughts. So I'm like, okay, you're not getting any thoughts that are different than any other kid. That helps with the shame piece. And a lot of times I found that kids are embarrassed, you know, and they don't know why they're getting these thoughts, and they think maybe their friends aren't getting them. And so a lot of education at first of, you are not getting any thoughts that are any different than every other kid. Yours are just getting stuck because you have OCD. And this is what's happening in your brain. And I really simplify it for them. And then that helps with the shame piece. I even give them my own examples. I get sticky thoughts too. Things like that. So working with slime is really fun. Sometimes I'll take like a big ball of putty, and I'll put it on the table in front of them, or Play-Doh or slime or something. And I'll say, okay, this is your anxiety right now. And every time we go through and we face your fears, your anxiety starts losing power. And so we'll take little pieces of the Play-Doh off and put it on the table. They see it getting smaller and smaller and smaller. As their life is getting bigger, their OCD and anxiety is getting less powerful. So there's a lot of visual cues for them.
Yeah,
really fun.
I like that. And yeah, lots of sensory toys and putties and Play-Dohs and stuff.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
I felt that the education of what's happening in your brain has been really helpful for them.
Yeah. Yeah, that the visual representation of seeing what's going on for them. Yeah. And those putties and stuff, they're quite sensory, right? So that's quite calming in and of itself, just playing with that. Yeah, slime. Okay, cool. No, I like that. Thank you. And the other thing is, so when you are going through CBT with them or ELP, how are you keeping them engaged and interested in the sessions?
Right. Okay. That's a good question too. I do a lot of like play with them. Mm. So sometimes I'll make these mindfulness glitter jars where it's like a jar of water with a little bit of glue, and they get to pick out their colors of glitter. And I'll use that to demonstrate mindfulness. We'll watch the glitter fall. I'll kind of say, all this glitter swarming around is kind of like your brain, all the thoughts swarming around. If we sit and we observe your thoughts, they generally go down, they settle. Mm. So we'll use things like that. Sometimes the whole session is not always about their fear. Sometimes they just want to talk about other life stuff. Sometimes they want to play a game. With kids that young, a lot of it's about building the relationship just so they feel safe in the first place.
Yeah.
So it's a mixture. It's a mixture of everything. Yeah. And it depends on the client too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, let's say with the young children,
yeah,
what are the things you're doing initially to build that relationship so they feel safe and that they like you and stuff?
Right. I'll ask them a lot of questions, you know, just life questions, getting to know them, finding common ground to relate to, like asking about their interests or having them describe, you know, something they enjoy doing. We'll play games together. One of my favorite tools, especially starting off, is Jenga. I write little feeling questions on the Jenga game. So it'll say, I've made it more fear related. So it'll say something like, I'm afraid of blank. And then we take turns and it's a way of talking about our fears, talking about why we want to face our fears, but they see it as playing a game. So that's a fun way to do it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that. Yeah. See, so you've linked the gameplay with the getting them to start to think about deep questions or fear-based questions.
Yeah. Right. And sometimes they're not having it. Sometimes they just don't want to talk about it, you know? So it really just depends on the kid.
Yeah. So you get the normal Jenga out at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes they'll say, can we just play it without the questions? I'm like, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. I like that. Okay, yeah, no, thank you. So actually, yeah, I'll stick with this question. So just what would you say to, so we do have quite a few parents listening. What words of sort of hope or wisdom do you have for parents listening who have children with OCD?
Right. Yeah, it's a great question because it's hard. I mean, I just know from my parents' own experience, it's very challenging watching your child suffer like that.
Yeah.
And oftentimes parents get really pulled in to the compulsive cycle. They get made part of the compulsions. The one that I see the most is reassurance seeking, where the child will ask a lot of reassurance. Oftentimes I usually bring the parent in for the last 10 minutes or so of the session. And we just talk. We talk about what's going to happen for homework. I always get the child's buy-in. You know, we say, this is what I have in mind for homework. What do you think? Can you help me come up with a homework assignment? Can you help me come up with, I call it like a brave challenge, or an exposure activity or whatever resonates with them.
Yeah.
And we really work together as a team, especially when the kids are that young. We work together as a team and get the family members involved. But specifically for the parents, it's just so difficult for them, and understandably so, to see their child that distressed. And we both know that when OCD wants reassurance, it's relentless.
Yeah.
So the child's not going to, they just want the reassurance. And that's what OCD does. And when the parents give into that reassurance, it does make the child feel better or calms them down for maybe like 0.5 seconds, and then it comes back again. But they see that it works for a little bit. And so sometimes they're just so desperate for that little bit of relief, or they just want their child to feel that little bit of relief. And so I normalize that for them. It's like, of course, like that makes sense that you would want to help your child feel better. In that moment, that makes sense. And then it's just a lot of education of, that's actually not helping your child, that's actually helping their OCD. And so framing it like that can be really helpful, because then next time they want to do it, they're kind of reminded of like, oh, I'm not actually helping my child here, I'm actually helping OCD grow. And then we work on it together. We kind of come up with a game plan, and I never want to stop reassurance cold turkey, because that can cause chaos. So we work on a way of reducing it, something that everyone's in agreement with. And it's education all around and teamwork, really. Everyone, the whole family's on board.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah, no, that's great. And yeah, so where you're working with parents to educate them, because rightly so, as you say, you know, they see that giving in to that reassurance or whatever the compulsion is, they see that there's a reduction in anxiety in their kid. Obviously, it's short term, and you want them to try and sit with that uncomfortableness and ride it out a bit so OCD doesn't get its fuel. Is there, other than kind of educating them on that cycle, is there ever any skills you teach the parents on just learning to sit with anxiety and uncomfortableness and uncertainty?
Yeah. Sometimes what I think is a really great thing to do for the kids is to have the parent model doing hard things in their own life. So if the child sees like mom, dad, older siblings, they're facing their fears, maybe I can face my fears too. And they're seeing like mom can handle anxiety. She's scared while she's doing this. Let's say mom has a fear of elevators and, you know, being very open with the child. I am really afraid of this elevator. I'm afraid it's going to get stuck. I'm afraid it's going to fall. I'm afraid the doors aren't going to open, but I want to make my fear smaller. So I'm going to practice being afraid and I'm going to make my fear smaller so I can make my life get bigger. Mm. The modeling skill is really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any other ways I'm sure there's many, but any other ways you want to share that you incorporate family members into treatment?
Right, yeah. So I'll do a lot of games. So whether it's, incorporating family members into doing exposures with their kids, incorporating siblings, especially if the obsession involves a sibling or a fear of a sibling or anything like that, incorporating siblings in, making it fun. Kids love funny, humorous game sorts of things. And so we'll do a lot of that where the whole family plays. And then also what I found is really helpful is some sort of a reward system. So the child has an incentive, something that they want. They are looking forward to every time they face their fear, every time they do an exposure, they can get a sticker. They can get some sort of a chart where they're working their way towards something that they really want.
Yeah.
So that's been helpful as well. But just depends on the, really depends on the kid and depends on their relationship with their family and how involved the family member is. But I really like getting the whole family involved, especially in playing games and doing exposures together.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense to bring them all together. Cause it's, Chris from Unstuck? Is it the family that fights? What am I trying to say? The slogan I'm missing.
I know what you're talking about.
Beat family fights OCD together, beats OCD together. I think that's it.
Yeah. It's something like that. It's really good. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, cool. No, thank you for that. And then let's talk about acceptance and commitment therapy alongside exposure and response prevention. What are some of the ways that you bring ACT into ERP?
Oh, ACT is my favorite. I just love it so much. I really do. I usually recommend that the clients will read The Happiness Trap or by Russ Harris or A Liberated Mind by Stephen Hayes. Those are my two favorites. I love those books. And I love ACT because it's all about really just tolerating discomfort, because we really do live in a world where when we feel something uncomfortable, we push it away really quickly. We're like, oh no, that doesn't feel good. I got to get it away. I'm anxious. I got to solve it. You know, and we live in a society where that's actually the normal way we treat discomfort. And as Russ Harris talks about in The Happiness Trap, we are under this impression that in order to be happy, we have to be comfortable all the time. Mm-hmm. And we can't experience discomfort, anxiety, stress, sadness, all those really natural human emotions that actually every human experiences, not just people with OCD, every single human experiences the whole array of emotions. Yeah. And we don't have to get rid of the unpleasant ones in order to be quote unquote happy. So hence the happiness trap. So I just love that concept, because once we come to terms with the fact that life is difficult, and there will be discomfort and there will be unpleasant emotions and there will be hardships along with all the really great stuff, then it just doesn't seem, it's that acceptance piece I found has just been so helpful with the treatment of OCD.
Yeah. Is that across both children, teens and adults, you found that?
Mostly adults. I found it's easier to explain ACT with. I haven't done a lot of ACT work with kids.
I suppose it's more philosophical, isn't it?
It is. I guess we could do it in the sense of, you know, kind of framing it like, let's get your life back. Mm. You know, if they're avoiding something that's really important to them, like I'm just giving a random example, if they're avoiding a sport because they're afraid of, you know, let's say they're avoiding soccer because they're afraid of the dirt on the soccer field, but they really love soccer. Then we could frame it in a sense of, let's go towards your fear. Let's do what you love. Let's not let fear take this away from you.
Yeah.
Just because it's scary. Let's actually practice being afraid and doing it anyway. So I guess that's how I would incorporate it with the kids.
Okay. Yeah. It
makes teaching sense. Them that you can be afraid. It's okay to be afraid.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, yeah, you're also talking about values there. With the adults, is that something you sit down for a while and discuss?
Yeah. Actually, the first maybe couple sessions, I focus on ACT and I focus on how thoughts will come into our mind. And there's this metaphor called the sushi train. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
No.
But it's by Russ Harris. It's a little cartoon on YouTube. It's really cute. But it's all these little sushis going by on the sushi train. And he talks about how some of the thoughts or some of the sushis are pleasant, some are unpleasant, and some are neutral. And they're just going by on the train. And just because they're unpleasant, we don't have to pick it up and shove it in our mouth. You know, we don't have to pick it up and engage with it and do all the things with it. We can just watch it go by. And the whole point is that there's going to be that mixture of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. Mm. And that's just how our brains work. OCD or not, that's how anyone's brains work.
Yeah.
And so I usually start out with that just to demonstrate you're going to get weird thoughts. We all get weird thoughts. You're also going to get some neutral thoughts. Your thoughts are going to get stuck if you have OCD, especially if it you know, attaches to something you really care about, like a loved one or your relationship or your sexuality or your religion. Of course, those are going to get stuck because you care about them.
Yeah.
But really the concept remains the same of we can still watch those intrusive thoughts come in. We can kind of visualize them going along on that sushi train and we don't have to pick them up. We can just watch them come. We can watch them go. Then they're going to come back because we have OCD. Then we'll watch them go. Mm-hmm. And that whole concept of really not struggling with the thoughts is very helpful for them. So
yeah,
I love it. I love it so much. ACT is my favorite. So
yeah, I like it too. It's a good metaphor. And obviously when you're at a sushi restaurant, there will be the odd plate that comes around that you really like the look of, so you can pick it up and engage with it.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I like that. Okay, cool. And is there anything else about ACT that... So, yeah, you mentioned with the kids, actually, that you would consider kind of, with the soccer example of you really want to play soccer, so let's focus on that. It's an activity you want to do versus the dirt and the mud and whatever else. Is that something you do with the adults with getting them to focus on the values as opposed to the... Mm-hmm. You're facing your fear instead of... So the facing your fear is the normal way instead of let's face your fear because of X, Y, and Z because you want to do that.
Yeah. Bringing it back to values, I found is so much more impactful than just saying, let's do something that really scares you. Mm. Let's actually remember why we're doing it. We're doing it to get your life back. We're doing it to make your world bigger again, make OCD smaller. Because OCD right now, OCD and anxiety is calling the shots. And we don't want that. That's not a way to live. And so I love the example of, usually when I'm explaining ACT at the very beginning, I'll give the example of like, let's say you live in California, your sister lives in New York, she's getting married. You're terrified of airplanes, terrified. So you have two choices. You can either choose to let the fear kind of make that choice for you. It's too difficult. I'm going to be too uncomfortable. I might have a panic attack. The plane might crash, whatever it is, and kind of choose to stay home and miss the wedding, something that's very important to you. Or you can choose to say, okay, I'm really uncomfortable right now. I notice that I'm having a lot of scary thoughts that this airplane's going to go down or that I'm going to have a panic attack on the airplane. Just noticing all the thoughts and then going back to values. But you know what? What's really important to me is my sister. Mm. And I would be very, very, very sad if I had to miss my sister's wedding, especially if it was because fear was telling me I had to miss it. And so then we work on, let's get you on that airplane. Let's face that fear. And let's practice making decisions according to what you value in life rather than letting fear make those choices for you.
Yeah.
And that is a great motivator for them. especially I've noticed with the pedophilia themed OCD or harm OCD. That's a big one where I love to incorporate examples of living values versus letting OCD call the shots, because OCD will say, you can't touch your kid. You can't give your kid a bath. Mm. If you have little cousins or little siblings, or let's say you're a teacher, you can't give your kids high fives. You can't, it makes all these rules for you. You can't be left alone with the kid. Someone always has to be supervising you. What if you hurt them? All those things. Mm. And then you end up missing out on so much of your life and so much of what you really value. Usually people with pedophilia themed obsessions and harm obsessions, they get those obsessions because they care about kids usually.
Yeah.
You know, that's why, otherwise why would it freak them out? You know, yeah. That's usually the people, the most gentle, the most loving, the people that usually love the kids the most are the ones that I've noticed that get those fears the most. And so let's get you back to doing what you love to do. Let's get you holding your baby. Let's get you giving your baby a bath again. Mm. You know, let's get you giving your students high fives and hugging them and, you know, babysitting alone or being left alone and all those things that OCD is telling you you can't do.
Yeah.
Because something could happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that. And I can see why it's incredibly motivating for your clients. Okay, what are some of the, let's focus on adults specifically for this question.
Yeah.
What are some of the sticking points you find with treating OCD? Whether that's you doing the treatment or your clients kind of doing it themselves, if that makes sense. Like what kind of stops them or gets in their way?
Of doing the treatment.
Yeah. Or engaging in it.
That's a great question. Really, it's hard. It's scary. So you, in order to fully engage in ERP, you have to be willing to do the work and you have to be willing to be afraid. And I always tell people, like, I meet with you once a week, sometimes every other week. That's like four times a month. You know, that's 4 hours out of the whole month. So that's why homework is so important. Homework, doing exposures every single day, like filling out your exposure log that I give you, bringing it back in. Really practicing outside of session is so important. And it's the people that are practicing consistently between sessions that are the ones that are getting better faster. So that's what I've noticed is, it's, you know, if they're not willing to put in the work outside of the session, it's just going to be a lot slower.
Yeah. Yeah.
Willingness. Though.
Willingness. Yeah.
Willingness is a huge, yeah. Yeah. You can't start ERP and not be willing to be afraid. It's not going to work. Mm. You know, you have to be willing to experience discomfort in order for it to get better. Because the whole point of ERP is really, it's not to make your fear to go away. It's to get you good at tolerating being afraid. Yeah. And so we just practice being afraid over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. The idea of horror movies comes into mind for me. You know, I am not willing in any way to watch a horror movie. And whenever I watch one, it's absolutely horrible because I'm not willing. I'm not going into it like I, you know, and there's people out there who love horror films. You know, they willingly go to the cinema and sit through it. And that's why it doesn't bother them so much. And maybe it did initially. And over time, it's got less, you know, as habituation with exposure. So, yeah, I guess, like you said, ERP, you got to be willing to kind of go into that haunted house or that is that horror film.
Right. Yeah. And just coming back to the to the fact that it's a choice. It's not that you aren't able to do it. You just have to make the choice to do it. And we can do it, you know, if it's too scary, if it's too difficult, we can try to tone it down and say like, okay, what are you willing to do? Mm-hmm. Like, if this feels like too much, can we do a variation of it? Can we tone it down a little bit, but where we're still facing the fear?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sticking with like the silly horror movie example, you know, if I knew that sitting down and watching that horrible movie would, you know, improve my life somehow, I'm sure I could find the willingness to do it.
Right.
You know, but there's no payoff for me to sit and watch a horror movie. So
I don't blame you. I'm actually with you on that. I have no interest in watching it. I am with you on that.
Nice. That example just sticks in my head. I remember reading it in an OCD book once, and they talk about sitting in a cinema and watching a horror movie. First time, it's terrifying. By the 10th time you sit there, you're actually bored by the horror movie, which is an example for habituation, obviously. But
right,
I think that's why it's stuck in my head. But no, thank you for that. That was good. Okay, well, let's talk about your advocacy. Which you've done a good job, and that's how I got to know you initially, all those years ago. So yeah, just tell us about your advocacy.
So I originally started the Instagram a few years back. We originally started by posting like Mythbusters on here's what people think OCD is, and here's the facts, and here's what it actually is, and that's how it started. And then I just ended up getting into it, and I loved it. I loved posting education. I love posting tools. I love posting just ways that people could see, like, oh wait, that I relate to that. Oh my gosh, that could be OCD. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Because probably the most common response that I hear is, I didn't know I had OCD because I'm not cleaning and I'm not touching things and I'm not counting. Like, I had no idea. I'm having scary thoughts about children. You know, most people don't relate that to OCD if they don't know. And so just posting more of the taboo things that are a lot less talked about and are even a lot less known among clinicians. Like, hey, you can have fears about sexual intrusive thoughts. You can have intrusive thoughts that involve religion. You can have intrusive thoughts that are violent. And this can also be a big part of OCD. And so that, it's just been a way for me to give back in a way of, this is what OCD is, really just on the educational aspect of it.
Yeah.
You know, just advocating, bringing more awareness to people.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. And so just, you know, because you've done it for a while now and you've done a good job at it, just words of wisdom or advice for future advocates or people that want to get into advocacy.
Yeah, let me think about that. I would say don't be afraid to talk about the taboo things. If you're willing to talk about it, we need more discussion about that stuff. And that can be really hard to talk about, you know, talking about especially pedophilia related things. Any sort of like sexual orientation fears is hard to talk about. Fears that have to do with your religion, fears of harming your children, postpartum OCD, things like that. Those are hard. You don't see those floating around social media because people are ashamed. And it brings a lot of shame and guilt. And a lot of people are afraid that if they speak out about it, they'll get locked up and, you know, get misdiagnosed and all those things. And so they're afraid. Yeah. So I would say if you're willing to, let's bring more awareness to those lesser talked about themes. It's finding that common ground where people can see a post and see like, oh, that I relate to that. Let me look into this a little bit more. Sometimes it might be the post that they need to recognize that they might have OCD and there's proper treatment out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. And is there anything that you wish you had known when you had started your advocacy journey?
Anything I wish I had known?
Or could have helped you?
I guess what was a little bit difficult for me is I started out as an advocate and then I became a clinician in the process of it. And so I had to learn how to navigate that. I had to make sure I'm not giving any sort of advice. I'm not, you know, Instagram is not a place for therapy. Things like that. I had to learn how to navigate. And now I feel like I have a better grip on it, but I'm still learning.
Yeah.
And that's a difficult thing for me to navigate because social media is kind of new for clinicians. Like, there's a lot of therapists nowadays that are on social media, but it's still an area that's being navigated and we're all learning about it together.
Yeah. Yeah, I can completely understand that. something I've had to learn.
Yeah,
I think we're all fumbling in the dark on that one.
I know. But, yeah, I... I can't think of anything else, any other words of wisdom. Just finding common ground, finding the things that people will relate to, that it'll catch their eye. A lot of awareness. Humor, I found, has been a big thing. Humor catches people's eye. That's true. It makes them feel like it's relatable. And it makes them feel less alone, even though it's in a humorous way.
Yeah. Yeah, really good
point. I love humor.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Humor is important. You know, it's such a tough subject as well. So a little bit of humor can go a long way.
Right.
Cool. All yeah, right. No. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, go on.
I was just going to say, especially if it's about something that's really hard to talk about, bringing humor to it and kind of showing OCD that you see it and that you are not playing its games anymore. We can actually make, not that it's funny, it's not funny in any way, but if it's kind of like gallows humor, you know, if we call it out and we say, like, this is just a thought like any other thought and I don't have to engage with it, it's common ground for people to relate with.
Yeah, absolutely. You're kind of laughing at the absurdity of OCD. You're not laughing at the pain of it, but the craziness of the thoughts, and how when you get that distance, you realize how absurd and weird and arguably funny they are when you're not obviously anxious with them.
Oh yeah, and that brings up, it makes me think of, like, if people have a certain fear, they'll often look at other people's fears and they'll say, I want that one. They'll be like, I don't want mine anymore. I want that one.
Yeah.
Because that one, I can see that that's ridiculous. Like, they'll be able to say, I can see that one over there wouldn't bother me as much. So I would rather have that one. Yeah. And so it kind of just shows that when you're not in the thick of it, and when you're not personally in the thick of, like, the intrusive thoughts bombarding you, and you're able to defuse and to see them for what they really are, you getting more space can kind of reveal them for what they are, which is most of the time ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. Okay, so general question. Words of hope for those with OCD.
It gets better. It does get better. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing I would want people to know, especially because it took me a long time to realize this, is that there is a gold standard treatment for OCD, which is exposure and response prevention. And it's very, very important that it is treated with that modality, that form of therapy. That is the gold standard for it. So oftentimes, you know, talk therapy is great. It can be great. But when it comes to OCD, it could be, you know, it could go into reassurance giving. It could go into a lot of compulsions that you don't even realize you're doing.
Yeah.
And that can actually hurt more than it can help.
Yeah, good point. Okay, cool. Thank you. And let's say you could pick up that phone and call your 20-year-old self. What would you tell her?
What would I tell her, my 20-year-old self? I would tell her, it's a hard question, Stu. I'm trying to think what I was doing when I was 20. I would say it's okay to be afraid. Actually, that would be the biggest thing. It's okay to be afraid, and you can tolerate discomfort. Because that is something that we are fighting against as a society, is the quick fixes and how to get rid of anxiety and how to, you know, even all the self-help books out there, a lot of them are get rid of your anxiety or get rid of, you know, live your best life or whatever it says. And I think Stephen Hayes totally nails it. Like, we have it all wrong. We have it all wrong. We don't need to get rid of discomfort. That's actually what's causing our suffering, is trying to get rid of suffering.
Yeah.
So yeah. If I knew that as a 20-year-old, that would have probably been a big game changer for me.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, no, that's brilliant. I haven't actually finished that book yet. I should probably get back on it. But yeah, I agree. It's the kind of resistance, and not allowing the natural ebb and flow of life to happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it happens. Yeah, it's just part of being a human. We're going to experience all the emotions.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that would be a good phone call. So you've got a billboard where you live or where you work. What do you want written on that billboard?
I always just, my first reaction was OCD is not an adjective, because we have come so far in advocacy and in creating awareness, but it is still very misused and misunderstood. And, you know, I think that keeps a lot of people suffering for way longer than they need to. And so just not using OCD as an adjective. It's so much more than that.
Absolutely. Yeah. But, I mean, sorry, go.
I was just going to say it's a debilitating, you know, mental health disorder that causes huge amounts of suffering and pain and heartache. And it's not only misleading when we use it as an adjective, it's actually, you know, it's increasing the stigma and it's keeping people from getting help, because then the people with, you know, not the traditional, like, quote unquote OCD that we think of, they have no idea they're struggling with it. They have no idea. They just think that they're a monster. When really it doesn't even matter what the content of your thoughts are. OCD is OCD and it's all treated the same.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I think we have come a long way, but yeah, there's still a lot of work to be done. Which is good because it keeps us busy.
Definitely. We have things to do.
Exactly. And there's more space for more advocates to further that mission.
Right.
Cool. And is there anything else that I haven't asked you that you wish you could have said today?
Think so. I think we covered it.
Nice.
Yeah. Is there anything you can think of?
No, I think that's great. I can always do a follow-up later. But yeah, thank you so much for your time. I mean, I really enjoyed this stuff about the kids and working with them and then going on to the adults. I think that's great.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
So there you have it. Thank you to Natalie for her time and to you guys for listening. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Till we speak, take care.